Okay, so yeah, so tonight is Tu Bishvat, and it's actually Boba Yom of my father-in-law's yurtzeit. So this shir, that's what I ran from. They're having a little yurtzeit meal at my house, the family here in Israel. But so the shir will be dedicated Neshama Shalom Aliyah of Usher Aryeh Ben David Meir. Okay, so as I was saying, this first year, this might be two parts, we'll see how we do on time, is going to mainly be based on a year that I heard from Rav Goldwicht this week. And so let's start some ideas regarding Tu Bishvat. So source one is, and this one is not, he did not mention this idea, it's just an idea that I think I remember from previous times. But you have the first, you have the Mishnah Rosh Hashanah, which talks about Abba Rosh Hashanah Haim, that there are four, you know, time periods in the year which have each date, you know, the beginning of Nisan, the beginning of Tishrei, beginning of Elul, and Tu Bishvat, or it could be a Machlokas, either the first Hashanah Tu Bishvat, that they have significant halachic significance for different areas of halacha. So. But let's just talk about the very last one was, I said, either Rosh Chodesh Shvat or Tu Bishvat. And that was what I underlined here. It was Be'echad Bishvat Rosh Hashanah Le'ilan, Kedivri Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai says that the significant part time in the calendar when you want to, and this will have nafkaminas between, which we would see in the halachic shir, which, let's say, would have... significance for Trumas and Maestros, where you can't be, where you have to, you know, pay up the Trumos and the Maestros from the Prados of that year, and you can't do it from, you know, the next year. So the cutoff point will be for fruit from trees would come from, would be the first of Shvat. And Beis Hillel, as we know, says it's the Tu Bishvat, it's the 15th of Shvat. So my first question was, is what's the machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel? You know, what's the nukudat hamachloket? If you look at the Gemara and source two, it says what is significance of the first of Shvat. It says be'echad b'Shvat Rosh Hashanah le'ilan. My time. What's the reason? Amar Rav Elazar, Amar Rav Yoshia. Ho'el v'yatzu rov gishmei Hashanah. Most of the rain has already fallen on the first of Shvat. And therefore, that's a significant time for the tree, and that's going to be the cutoff of when we are going to look at Trumas and Maestros from before that date and or after that date. That will be the cycle of the year. Okay, so what I wanted to say, and this again, I'm a little hesitant because I'm saying it myself, but somehow I think I've heard it somewhere, even though I didn't, you know, see it just right now, is I wanted to possibly say that both Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai. So what's the nukudat machlokes? We say it's a machlokes and metzias. We don't like to make. So Beit Shammai says most of the rain came by, you know, the first of the month, and Beis Hillel says no, most of the rain came by the 15th of the month. We wouldn't like to say that. So I wanted to say that maybe both Beit Shammai and Beis Hillel agree that most of the rain falls on the first of the month. So the tree is really prime and has all the potential, and this is going to be like the hashkafic direction I'm going to lead, that everything is prime in potential to produce beautiful fruits, as is the first of the month. However, and they both agree, possibly, and again, hopefully, you know, if someone saw this, it would be great, and I might, you know, I just didn't have time to look. But I was thinking, maybe they both agree that the first actual... physical in this world sign that the tree is full of potential, the little bit of flowering that happens from the, you know, from the tree is going to happen on the 15th. It's going to happen in Tu Bishvat. It might be like an early, like Shkedim, or like they say, it begins to, almond tree begins maybe to, you know, to flower the flower now. So if they both agree, then it could be just the Nekudas of Machlokas. Really, this is a holiday, Tu B'Shvat, of latent potential. It's a holiday of really celebrating, you know, a tree which looks pretty, looks bare, right, but is bursting very shortly with tremendous potential to bring forth fruit. However, Beit Shammai says that's enough. As long as we have a date where we say rove of the rain fell and everything is primed, you know, that's a day we should celebrate, and therefore he says, you know, the first of the month. Beis Hillel says, I agree with that, but we just don't live in a world where it's completely concealed potential. I think you need some sign, even if it's not rove trees that are going to start blossoming maybe in the springtime, but if there's even one tree that's already, you know, beginning to blossom on the 15th, that's the reason to cut off that we should and begin to celebrate. So maybe in a hashkafic reason, you know, some hashkafic, you know, idea number one is Tu B'Shvat might be a holiday, you know, celebrating potential. Yes?
To support, you're saying you're not sure. And yeah. To support, you're saying, isn't it, we always say that
correct.
A consistent Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai,
yes.
Potential versus...
So maybe I gave a shiur like that 15 years ago, you know, and I'm like that. Good, thank you. And so maybe this was one of the nafkaminas that I brought in.
I heard it explicitly from Mordechai Willig.
Beautiful. Okay.
Potential versus actual. Rav Goldberg. Rav Meir Goldberg's uncle.
Okay.
Shalom. Yeah, he posited that you see that consistent theme throughout Shas.
Right.
And the
right.
intermediate example, which perhaps Avra has in mind, you have in mind, is Nero
Chanukah. Yeah.
Right. So Rav Goldberg tied Nero Chanukah to the Machloket.
Over here. Okay, so Baruch, you know, Baruch, that I shouldn't say Shekivan, you know, it's just Zacharti, you know, it's like, you know.
Maybe I'm
Shevarti.
About
Goldberg. Wait, so Beit Shammai is more optimistic.
35, you more optimistic. Like looks at the future potential in a more, you know, as real already. You know, future potential is already, you know.
We don't need a visual representation of potential.
Right. Right.
Well,
okay.
Beitella wants to see more of a visual representation of the potential.
How does that fit into Chanukah? Chanukah, they're saying actual, meaning you can't light the candle for the second day until you've already arrived at the second day, and it's been actualized. It's now the second
Show
day.
Me the money.
As opposed to Beit Shammai, you have this 8-day holiday, he's ready to light 8 candles right from the start. There's 8 days of potential there.
Cool, so then how can we light in Bein HaShemasha in Shul?
Oh, that's already getting
into details. Which skia? Okay, so a second idea, is if you look at sources, and this was the idea that I heard, the first idea that I heard from Rav Goldberg on his shiur, he asked the following question. If you look at sources 3, 4, and 5, it shows you that Tu B'Shvat has an element of simcha. And you look at source 3, it says that you don't say tachnun. On Tu B'Shvat. Source 4 says you don't fast on a Tanis Tzibor, a Bahag, you know, Monday, and if it's falling on, especially if the first one falls on Tu B'Shvat, you shouldn't institute that fast. And the fifth Mar Makom says that a Chassan on the day of Tu B'Shvat wouldn't be fasting. So all three of those sources bring down that there's an element of Simcha that would override a fast, and you wouldn't say tachnun. So Rav Goldberg's first question was, again, if we got to the halachic point of our shir, it's really a date on the calendar that has to do with agricultural tax law, and, you know, we're not, like, celebrating Simcha of, you know, April 15th, you know, rah, 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 you know, it's a cutoff. It's a cutoff on the calendar. So what Simcha do we have in terms of, the day before Tu B'Shvat to the day after Tu B'Shvat. Okay, I know that, you know, I can't take, you know, if I'm taking Trumas and Maishos off, you know, off my vegetables, and I picked one the day before Tu B'Shvat and the day after, I can't use one to, you know, pot to the other. You know, it's a cutoff. I can only use it, you know, that would be Rosh Hashanah, so I apologize. But I took a fruit from before Tu B'Shvat and a fruit after Tu B'Shvat, I couldn't, and then also Maaseh Shem, correct, depending on which year it is. But so it has those ramifications. But where's the Simcha involved in Tu B'Shvat? So he said, and then he asked the second question. That was his first question. He asked in source 6, he quoted the Bnei Yisaschar, who I'm not sure who that is, and I didn't have time to look it up. Okay, and...
He actually say Yisaschar?
So he brings down a minhag of the Hasidim that on Tu Bishvat they're gonna daven to a Kodesh Baruch Hu that he should provide a esrog kasha yafa umahudar. And so his second question, he's asking, why, you know, I understand dealing with fruits, and an esrog is a fruit, so, and I do a mitzvah with this fruit, so maybe, you know, but is that, you know, we're not davening that Hashem should give us, you know, good olives so we can crush them for Shaman Zayed Zach to light our menorah, you know, and someone's going to say, oh, one's deraisa, one's derabana. No, but is there a deeper connection between now and, you know, davening for an esrog, you know, months away? So he went to source 7 and quoted the following psukim from the third day of creation. And the Rashi already is going to point out that the command to the trees were that they should produce an eighth pri, oseh pri. So that not only should the orange tree produce oranges, that it should be oseh pri, but even the eighths should be a pri. Even the bark and the trunk of the orange tree, should have been able to take a bite of that trunk, and it would taste like oranges. So that should be an eighth pri, not just an oseh pri. However, in the next pasuk, what did the tree, in actuality, what did it produce? It's only an eighth oseh pri. It didn't do an eighth pri. It was only an eighth, which produces fruit, but the eighth itself was not a fruit. Okay, correct, except for the esrog, and that's going to lead into answer number 2, which we're going to get to. But the so Rashi points out it didn't produce an eighth pri. It didn't produce a trunk that is also a pri. Sheyet tam ha eitz ketam ha pri. It didn't produce. Nowadays, you know, tree trunks don't taste like fruit. And then Rashi goes on to say, and that's why when Adam Arishon and sinned with an eitz, and therefore when they were punishing Adam, Hashem also punished the Adama, Aror Adama, and also punished the Adama for its sin that it did in source 7. So he quoted, Rav Goldbach quoted, and I didn't have it because I don't have the source sheet. He quoted another 17th century Achron by the name of Yehoshua Heschel, the Rav from Apta, the Apta Rav, if you knew this one. I think he wrote a sefer called Oev Yisrael. I didn't have it. So I'll somehow tell you the idea, but when I did my Bar Ilan search, something the Maharal said in source 9, I thought, which maybe this is where Rav Yehoshua Heschel got it from. He might have been basing himself on a little bit on the idea of the Maharal. So Rav Goldfeld explained the name of the Apta Rav was the following: that the land knew that man is going to sin, right? And he wanted to somehow protect man, and he knows the land and the eights knows that man is going to be made from Adama and something from the Ruach HaPav and something from Shemayim. But so the tree decided to rebel, right, against the Tzivoy of Hashem. And we'll have to explain this. You know, does a tree have, you know, Bechira? So it's not, you know, but we'll have to say, no, this is an expression of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, maybe Allah B'machshav, maybe his original thought. We have that he wanted to create the world, you know, b'midas hadin, and then Hashem ended up creating b'midas harachmim. So also Hashem maybe wanted to create the world, his first intention, maybe eitz, you know, which is a pri, and then Hashem Kadosh Baruch Hu also. And this is like, you know, and this is this pasuk is hinting to this idea that Hakadosh Baruch Hu then maybe by saying it's only an eitz oseh pri, somehow had this idea in mind, maybe Rav Apta wanted to say, that he wanted to say that he knew that man was going to sin. So, and if man sins, and man's whole being, every second, his existence is talui on Hashem's will to keeping him alive. As soon as he goes against Hashem's will, man should cease to exist. So now HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying and this is the manifestation of the eights rebelling, saying, I'm going to make you from Adama. So man already now has like a built-in, like almost excuse, almost like a taina against the Kadosh Baruch Hu. You made me a farm in Adama. And Adama, from its already in day three, has already, the Eitzah from the Adama has already rebelled against your will. So I rebelled against your will because it was built, because I'm made from Adama, which rebelled against your will. So yes, I have to do tshuva and I want to do better. But at least give me an opportunity. Let me continue to exist and try to do better. And that petach he gets from the Eitz, which is part of his DNA, which already, Hashem, you made me from something which already has rebelled against your, which your will.
Rebelling, it's just a perfect being called.
Right.
Imperfect reality, I suppose.
Right. So Hashem maybe originally wanted to create man with Midas Hadin, or create man in such a way that he would, you know, never, you know, he really, if he's, shouldn't sin, you know, whatever, and that would be the ideal, that that man recognizes, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu to such an extent that even if he has Bechira, he just won't act on that because it's so manifest that who wants to be, you know, rebel against HaKadosh Baruch Hu? It just wouldn't be that way. In reality, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew that man needs to develop, and there might be, and that's the goal. You know, is to use your Bechira to perfect your neshama to such an extent that you willfully then will make, you know, asay ritzonecha, you know, so and then you will totally won't, you know, ever rebel. And anyway, but we're made of chomer, and this chomer already, so would show you by it showing you in the process of creation, which is already rebelled, Hashem understands. I made you from something rebels, meaning I understand that I gave you this bechira, and sometimes you're not going to live up, you know, live up to it. But at least I gave you the petach because I've created you this way to say you're sorry and to try to do better. So his answer was is that we're celebrating on Tu Bishvat. This, you know, why is there simcha? It's tremendous simcha because we're looking at a tree who maybe, you know, rebelled against Kadosh Baruch Hu, and that's part of our DNA, but that gives us the opportunity. Let's celebrate the opportunity to continue, you know, at least that we have the opportunity to do better and still try to come again before Kadosh Baruch Hu. So that was maybe the simcha of Tu Bishvat, which I didn't appreciate previously. He quote, maybe I said in 9 that you can maybe see this in the Maharal, in the Gur Aryeh. And he says, Avi, he lost, the tree didn't do what he was supposed to do. Ain't, what?
It's not the tree.
It's the Adama, which I guess because man was made from Adama. But the Pasuk is talking about the tree, which was... I didn't look carefully. Okay, perfect. So it works out well. It works out well. So it was the Adama which sinned, and the Adama which man is made from. Okay, so that was perfect. So he says, "Ein a perusha Adama avra b'mezid al tzivur Kadosh Baruch Hu. She'ein yetzah haraba shetei overet al tzivur Kadosh Baruch Hu." Right? Man has free will. You know, the constellations are, you know, just, you know, don't have free will, and it's whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu actually wanted this second reality, but maybe to teach us by telling us what a possible reality was originally, even though he wanted the second reality, it's showing you that he's giving you a petach to already built in to be able to still exist. So I think that was the idea. But the Maharal uses the words, the following ideas. He says that in the Shamayim, that's where the thing is Shleimut. But anything on Aretz or Adama is already dealing with something chaser, is already something lacking. He uses Aretz hazot shinu yeshla, right? Because it's considered, the Aretz is considered the tachtonim. And then he quote, I underlined on page, you know, flipping over the page, the Shamayim is the elyonim, and Aretz is the tachtonim, and the tachtonim have a chesrona, right? And they don't have the shlemus. And therefore, it says, "Ein atzadik ba'aretz." You can't live on this aretz, you know. Asher yaseh tov lo yechta, and so that, you know, that there's something already built into the land where, you know, where possibly we're going to sin, but it's built into the nature of being chaser from HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shleimus. So there, what I wrote, underlined. Tell me if he's saying the same thing as what I thought he was quoting in the name of the Apta Yeshua Hashal Apta Rav. He says, "V'chasher cheta adam." Balo pechitat chet o asher chata gam kein mizeh lifi shu nivra min haadama asher yesh ba chisaron. I think he's trying to maybe say that same idea, that man is built from adama, which has a chisaron, ulefichach nimtza chasa gam kein. So therefore man himself is slightly chasa, shaloi hamakai mitzvot baro al hashleimut. And therefore, again, I didn't have the Rav Goldvich source, but I thought maybe the Maharal was hinting to this idea that we're made of adama, which has chisaron, and that will give us a petach to when we sin.
And it says that adam is eitz
hasadeh. And says right,
that's
right,
pasuk, right?
That, correct.
So there's that parallel that
right, just like the eitz didn't do or sinned or something. So man can sin, but that again, it's God's. Wanted it that way somehow in the second
strives for perfection.
But strives for perfection. So that's his idea of the esrog. That yes, we are having an element of simcha because in the past, we recognize that the eitz is not a pri and there is imperfection in the eitz, and therefore that gives us an excuse on our imperfections. But remember the esrog even on Tu B'Shvat, because even that we still strive to come to the ideal. The ideal of a Kadosh Baruch Hu's mind is that we use our Bechira and we won't rebel. And we would be, have an eitz that is like a pri. And therefore, Stevie said, what is the only fruit that a tree that has, where if you look at source 12, Tanur Rabban Pri Eitz Hadar, Eitz Shetam Eitzo Upriyo Shaveh, Haveomer the etrog. The etrog tree is a tree that whose bark it has the taste of an etrog. So therefore, the Hasidic, the idea behind that minag Hasidus to daven for an etrog is to say on Tu B'Shvat, let's still remember our purpose in life is to perfect the world, is to try to get back to that, the ideal level of creation, and that's why we're thinking about an esrog onto.
Tosfos of Tanis says that the apple, the Adam ate, really was an esrog also.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if there's esrogs.
That's the question, because the esrog trees didn't grow in Europe, so where were these chassidim?
They had to really dive for the esrog. No, they really did.
They grew in Italy.
The Apter Rav, in source 10, the Apter Rav wanted to use this idea that the Aretz can be our petach for tshuva. He wanted to say that if you look at the end of the Tochacha in source 10, so what does Hashem say? V'zacharti et priti Yaakov, v'afet priti Yitzchak, v'afet priti Avraham, eskor, v'ha'aretz eskor. That Hashem is going to remember the land too. I know the pshat is he's going to remember Eretz Yisrael, but here he wanted to use it to support his idea that he'll remember the land, that the land rebelled, and therefore that's our petach to come. That even though we rebelled, please take us back in tshuva. He threw out in source 11. I just thought it was a nice thing, and I wasn't sure how to. Let me before I do that, let me say one other idea. I think I once heard in the past, and this is not from Rav Goldvich, but someone once explained to me, I'm trying to remember, that you look at the difference between the trunk and the pre. The pre usually is the result, right? We're doing all this work to get the pre, is the result. The trunk is sort of like the mechanism how to get there. So is the means. The trunk is the means, and the tree is the result. So I thought what he was saying is that not only should we be concerned about the pre, it's an etzos pre, but we should also, I guess, optimally, that the tree itself should also be a pre, meaning the means, you can take one and one. One's hashkafa, one's halacha. So they're two different source sheets. So that the trunk itself, meaning the tree itself, is also pre, meaning don't be concerned just with the pre, don't be concerned just with the result, but make sure that the means that you get to the result, meaning the trunk, should also be a pre, should also have flavor and be correct and be yashar and be... So these are some of the ideas so far. Let's review. So one idea was, it's a holiday that commemorates, potential, maybe Beit Shammai, maybe complete, even, hidden potential, Beit Hillel says at least you need at least a little bit of a manifestation, you know, of, and that's also, Hashem says, look, a person says, I want to do good, but, you know, you have to actualize it. You have to start doing some things, and when you start, Hashem helps you, and then and it grows, and maybe that's Beis Hillel saying, you at least have to start. You have to, you know, you have to show something. And then this idea of where does the simcha come from? The simcha might be coming from this opening that when the Adama sinned and in creation, it gave man a also an opening that after he sins, he can still come in front of a Kadosh Baruch Hu to ask for forgiveness and try to do better. Again, because his taina is, it's part of my DNA that you made me with something that's already you know, rebelled against you. So, and then another idea that I, and then we said the idea of the esrog is saying, okay, so that's looking in the past, but our future, our goal is to try get back to the pristine state. Pristine state. And when I said one of those pristine states where Eitz is pre, also, that means it's not, means, and that I was thinking maybe the tree is the means, while the pre is the result. So is it, the message will also be the fourth message that we're talking about tonight, is saying that the means also have to be sweet and yashar, you know, and you can't just so be focused on the pre, but you have to be focused on the trunk, the means of how you get to the pre. He mentioned something, and anybody, you know, we can, someone can, you know, do with it what they want. Source 11, I thought it was interesting. He says, Hashem created us, B'Tselem Elokim. And he said, B'Gematria, Tselem is eights. So, and again, it could fit in, because if we said Tselem Elokim, I know people talk about Tselem Elokim as being Bechira Chafshi. You know, I think just like God is the true being that is completely independent when he makes, he has complete Bechira Chafshi in terms of his will. So he has created man too to have absolute you know, freedom to make, you know, right or wrong decisions. And somehow that can come into our idea of on Tu B'Shvat, where we're you know, at least aiming to hone our Bechira to such an extent to get back to a state where the Tam Ha'etz is Ketam Ha'Pri. So I thought that, you know, that might be an idea too. Then he mentioned, he went on to another question. So he asked the following question. He says that if you look in source 13, if you look in source 13, and it says the following. This is the source for Imitatio Dei, that you should follow in Hashem's ways. It says, Acharei Hashem Elokechem Teilechu, Vototi ra'u, vetz mitzvotav tishmaru, v'kolot tishma'u, v'sota avodu, v'votit badkun. You should walk in, you know, the Derech Hashem, you should cling to Hashem. So the Medrash says in source 14, v'chi efshar l'basal adam l'osos b'shamayim l'hadbeik v'esh, can really, we can cleave to Hashem? Can we cling to Hashem? Hashem is a fire. How can we cling to Hashem? So we know in the Bavli, what would I have answered? So it's afhu, you know, ma'ata afhu. So it's like mahu afata, mahu rachum. So afata, you know, rachum. Just like Hashem clothes people, we should be involved in clothing. Just like Hashem is mevaker cholim, we should be mevaker cholim. Just like Hashem, you know, things like mahu afata. But this medrash says the following. Ella, how do you follow, you know, in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's ways? Ella mitchilat briato shela olam, in the beginning of the creation of the world, what was Hashem involved with? Lo nitasek ella b'mata tchila. Hashem first created, planted a Gan Eden and put Adam HaRishon in the Gan Eden. So he was involved in planting, you know, the Gan Eden. Because it says Vayita Hashem Elokim Gam Be'eden, so Afatem, so to you, Kashetem Nechnasim LeEretz Yisrael, when you come to Israel, Lo Titatzkun Ela B'Mata Tchila. You should also, the first thing you should do when you come to Eretz Yisrael is be involved in planting. So Rav Goldman's question was, you don't see it. You know, people come to Eretz Yisrael. The first thing you don't do is plant. You know, you don't plant. So why not? So he. So I would have said, so his thrust of his idea was, it's not talking about actual planting a tree. So I would have gone if it meant, you know, but it's talking about you. So I would have said, oh, so it means that you have to plant your roots. You have to plant your family. You have to plant your values. Make sure they all grow here. Make sure you, we grow the nation to be a model nation based on Tzedek Mishpat and being Orla Goyim. So that's what I would have said. The model of planting is that we have to plant and make this nation grow, and you know, for the purpose of our purpose as Jews in this world, you know, so everyone can then can call out, you know, B'Shem Hashem. So that would have, but he went and he kept it a little bit more with the analogy of planting itself. And what he said was the following, that he says that when we're involved with planting, and you know, and you grow a tree. So you know that there's the laws of Orla. You know, that means, so he went, and then for 3 years, this tree, if it's producing fruits, we can't eat the fruits. And only in the fourth year, when it produces fruits, and at the Ravai, we can take those fruits with Kedusha and eat them in Yerushalayim. So he was saying that idea, that he's like looking at that we have to set limits, and we have to realize that everything has a time, a place, an amount, the proper balance. That attitude is, you know, which is symbolized by planting, is the attitude, what he meant, that you too, when you come to Eretz Yisrael, develop those attitudes, and then you would be able to live a life of Kedusha and with a proper balance. He starts throwing around ideas like, you look at this eight, and, you know, in the first 3 years, it has fruit, so it's tov, but it's ra to take him, because Hashem told you not. So this is the eight tov ra, and just like, and we're being mechaper on the chait of Adam HaRishon. Adam HaRishon, very quickly, within, I don't know how much, an hour or something, I'm trying, after the tzivui, he didn't have the proper gvulot, and he violated, but us here, see, we have these gvulot for 3 years, and that we can even be metakein, not only, you know, perfecting ourselves, but we can even be metakein the chait Adam HaRishon. And you can look at that from the source 15. He says that this is in Vayikra Rabbah, Darash Rabbi Yehuda ben Paja, Mi gala afar me'enecha Adam HaRishon. Who's going to remove the offer from Adam HaRishon's eyes? Shol yecholta la'mod al tzivuscha shah achas. Adam, you couldn't even, you know, keep Hashem's tzivui even for 1 hour. V'arei banecha mamtim le'ola sholosh shanim. We, your children, are waiting 3 years, you know, to eat of the fruit. You Adam HaRishon, in the first hour, ate from the fruit. So by us, you know, fulfilling, you know, it's Tu Bishvat, and fulfilling the laws of the agricultural laws, and then the laws of Orla, are not only performing a specific mitzvah, but it can have, you know, metaphysical effects of even, you know, repairing the world and the chait Adam HaRishon. So that was the direction that Rav Goldwicht went. His last question was the following, and he pointed out something which I never realized before, and I thought it was very interesting. He quotes the Rashi in Source 16. And he says, and these are, each makkah, the makkah itself lasted for 1 week, and the warning and all the hasros lasted the 3 weeks. You know, so every makkah lasted a month. It was like 3 weeks of warning and hasharot, and then the makkah itself lasted a full week. So he said, if you work backwards, we know that makkah b'chorot was two. Benisan was the 15th of Nisan. So if you work back a month, so you're saying Choshech was two in Adar, was the 15th of Adar. And then he starts throwing out, you know, the Mitzrayim are in Choshech, and we know that Adar for us is Orah V'Simcha, you know, is about, you know, with light. But he then takes it back one more month. So then he means Arba, right, is now Tu Bishvat. This Tu Bishvat was the beginning of Makat Arba. And he quotes that pasuk, and what was, and Arba is va'achal et kol ha'eitz, right? You know, the Eitz HaSadeh, and it's eating the Eitz HaSadeh. And here we have a holiday, you know, which is celebrating, you know, Eitzim, Ilanot. So is there a connection? Is it just so happened? Or is there some connection between Makat Arba and Tu Bishvat? So he tried to explain the following. So I thought the question, you know, was very interesting. His answer was the following. He quotes a pasuk in Mishle that Melech ein la'arba, that there is no king of the arba. It's like a lion could be king of the animal world, and I think he was saying that the ox is the king of the behemoth, and then the nesher is the king of the birds. But with these arba, there's no king. But they can come, you know, complete swarms. They can come with complete numbers. But they're not, you know, they're completely rav, you know, tremendous amounts of quantity, but they're not, there's no king. The purpose of the king is to make them one, into like one unit. Again, this is more drusha of how Rav Goldvich, you know, builds his shir, if you can hear his voice. So, you know, so he was trying to say, he starts going in the direction of, you know, the arba is symbolized by the mitzrim, where, and the erev rav, where in their idea, nothing, what gives something importance? If you're Rav, if you have a lot of fame, if you have a lot of power, if you have a lot of money, you know, that's the Mitzrim's idea of Rav, you know, of and symbolized by the Arba, which is Rav, but not as a unit, not Yachid, Yachad, then, you know, that's the, you know, the idea symbolized by the Arba. Arba, but our idea of eight, of taking the same date, of where the Mitzrim syllab, you know, were somehow going through the Makat Arba, but Jews are not taking the same date, and we're focusing not on the Arba, but we're focusing on the eighth. And again, you could have said this about other things too, but he wanted, then he starts saying painting the eighth. The eighth has roots and branches and leaves and there, and it's all different parts, but it's all one unit. And he quotes different psukim about Jews, you know, are Yachad. And therefore, the idea would be that on Tu B'Shvat, not only are we looking at ourselves, you know, to perfect ourselves, but to internalize the idea that Tu B'Shvat is also on a should have some element of Achdut, and maybe we should focus also on the Achdut of Klal Yisrael. So just to summarize, maybe the Hashkafic ideas that I came up with, you know, that I heard from him in some other places of a Tu B'Shvat. So just to say that we saw a machlokas between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai of, and maybe we're trying to say that maybe they both agree that, you know, all the rains and full potential and the tree is totally loaded to go. That might happen at the first of the month, but it begins to actualize on the 15th of the month, and maybe Beis Shammai is saying you can celebrate a day, Tu B'Shvat, of complete potential, and again, Beis Hillel is also celebrating a holiday of potential, but at least you have to take the initial steps of your potential. I want to do good, I want to do mitzvot, I want to learn, I want to do chesed. Hashem says, okay, that's not something to celebrate yet, it's all good, but Beis Hillel is saying you have to at least take, you know, let's see it a little bit. And that's like the Tu B'Shvat with Beis Hillel, where the tree is beginning to flower. Some of the potential is beginning to sprout forth. So that would be one idea. It's a holiday potential, and we should try to actualize our hidden kochot. The next idea was, where's the simcha? And then we came up with this idea that maybe the simcha is that the land, it, you know, rebelled against the Kadosh Baruch Hu, but we're made from Adama, and therefore that could be our petach, that even though nowadays, think about it, you know, we don't live up to our potential, we do sin, we don't use all our kochot every time, every minute, to serve a Kadosh Baruch Hu, so, you know, in that ways we fail, but Hashem, you know, let us continue to exist, because you made us in our DNA, you made us with Adama, and it was your will on the third day of creation to actualize the world with an Adama, which didn't perform your original will, you know, what was Olam Machshavat Shavatcha, you know, Barishona. So therefore, that gives us our opening, and it's an element of Simcha, you know, that we can come back in front of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And we answered, but why, and why talk about the Minhag Chasidus about an Esrog? Because the Esrog is the only tree that is, the trunk is the taste of a tree, is, you know, is sweet, and so we shouldn't lose sight on, you know, yes, we're trying to look and give an excuse for our things that we didn't live up to, but again, let's focus on the Esrog, the ideal world, and the ideal service of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, how it should be. And then we mentioned something that maybe a pre is the result, and the trunk is the means. This I didn't hear from Rav Goldvich, I must have heard this from someone else. And it's saying that ideal is that the even the trunk should be a sweet and like a pre, and we should always not just we should focus even on our means should be yashar, even our trunk should be yashar and taste like a pre. And then we saw something about Tzelem Elokim is the gematria 8, Tzelem and 8, and again that tied into maybe our Bechira Chafshi of being maybe as pure as an 8 originally, that we should try to shoot for that. Then we came up with an idea of what about we come to we should follow HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Medrash said, how do you follow HaKadosh Baruch Hu? He was involved in planting, so we should be involved in planting. So that means he was saying that maybe the planting with Orla is a tikkun for Adam HaRishon. That was how and it told us gvulot, it told us a proper perspective and balance on life. It tells us, yes, we can have this, but it is its proper time, and its proper place, and its proper amount. And that's, what we what the Torah is for, and what our avoda should be. And then the last idea was where he wanted to say Tu B'Shvat is also the day that the Mitzrim were going through Makas Arba, and he wanted to say that maybe Arba symbolized the Mitzrim, where they were putting an emphasis on Rav and this multitude, and they thought that, yes, you need to have a lot of power, a lot of money, a lot of fame, a lot of fortune, and we're focusing a little bit on the eights, symbolizes Klal Yisrael, where all those parts are turned into a whole, are Shevet Achim Gam Yachad. So that was a share, which I think we're going to stop here, and I can save the halachic aspects of Tu B'Shvat for another night.